Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. My goal is to help you wake up and think about your day, not your diet. You've got other things on your mind, especially these days, right? So it's all about liberation. I did an interview today for a woman who asked me about recovery from binge eating disorder, recovery from eating disorders. And I said, I do not believe in recovery. We recover from a bad breakup. We recover from something disappointing, but we liberate ourselves from food, weight, and body image issues. Yes, it is possible. Total liberation. You can wake up and think about your day, not about what you're going to eat or not eat, not about, you know, what number is going to be on the scale, not about whether you're going to be good today or bad today. You can wake up and think about your life. Think about your day. Think about what you want to do, not think about what you shouldn't eat. Doesn't that sound nice? What a relief. Go into your closet, wear whatever you want, not give it a second thought. That is possible. That is possible. So I have a question from Esther. Esther says, I would love tips on handling a party or event situation where there is tons of food all laid out beautifully and so easy to grab. I get tempted because it's easy to grab, looks beautifully presented, and feels like a treat. So she posted this on my Food for Thought Facebook community page. So I don't know. I don't know more than that, but based on her question, a couple of things stand out. And the first is handling a party or event situation, it feels like a treat. So here's what stood out to me, that easy to grab came up twice, beautifully presented and like a treat. So it seems to me that there's some idea that she shouldn't eat it. Or she should, you know, she should only have a little bit, which automatically right then and there sets you up for overeating or even binging, because the anticipation or experience of deprivation will only make you want something more. If I say, hey, Esther, hey, anyone, all you guys listening, here is this beautifully presented food, but you can't have any. Are you going to feel like, okay, fine? Or are you going to feel deprived? And then when you feel deprived, we want what we cannot have. We want what we cannot have. And so that's right there, a setup for, oh, I'm just going to have one and another. And then pretty soon you've had way too much more than you wanted to, just because you're setting yourself up by psychologically creating deprivation, or you're shooting on yourself. I shouldn't have that. Makes you want something more. So Esther, I would look at that and see if you are telling yourself like, hey, here are these treats and I'm not allowed to have them. Of course you're going to want them. But if you tell yourself, I'm going to have them. They're good. They are beautifully presented. They're treats. I'm going to have some and I'm going to enjoy it, and not feel as if I'm doing something wrong. When we criminalize food, when we tell ourselves, oh, we should not have that. Oh, wait, Ronan is telling me something.
Hi, I have a caller.
Hello? Good morning.
Hi, this is Carly Gash.
Hi, Carly Gash. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. And my question is about actually what Esther is talking about, this treat situation. It's just been hard for me this week to regulate eating. It's like I either not eat at all and feel good because I don't think about food, or if I like start eating, I hyper focus on it.
Okay, those are two extremes, not eating at all and feeling good, or eating too much. So why do you feel good about not eating at all? Because those are, it's not good. I'm going to use too many negatives in this sentence. It's not good to not eat. And it's not good to eat too much. So where is this idea of, you know, sort of all or nothing coming from?
I don't know. Maybe because I've been overeating here and there. And the next day I had to cut, not just because I was starving myself, because my belly really hurt, my stomach really hurt. And because I was just waiting for the yesterday's food to digest, I didn't eat. I also had a day where I ate despite of that I overate the day before, and I felt bad. So I decided that if I overeat, that at least I will next day cut the back and allow my body to digest what I overate. So
Carly Gass, I hear a lot of focus on food and not a lot of focus on what you're eating and not why. And I like to reframe success as not staying within your diet or staying within what you think you should eat or staying within your food plan, however you want to put it. Right. I would reframe success as figuring out why you are eating that. Are you eating something because it's lunch, or are you eating something because you are trying to resolve something emotional with food? So if you just focus on food.
I think it's just the same thing coming up. I think it's been hard for me to give up this ineffective coping mechanism, as, you know, in life, I pretty much don't have, I don't know, it's just not hard to give up, because I used to use food as soothing, dealing with emotions, subconsciously, not even knowing that what I'm doing. And thanks to you, I'm able now to see it sometimes more often. But sometimes, actually, the best way for me to eat is just very little portions throughout the day, not like big quantities at once or something. But I cannot, once food gets there, I guess I'm in this bliss. I fall into this bliss and I lose the awareness. When I'm in awareness, I actually can eat reasonable amount because I feel the taste of food. I feel when I'm satiated. I guess, I don't know, maybe I lack pleasure in my life.
Well, but what I'm hearing, you may indeed lack pleasure in your life and you're using food for fun. But I'm also hearing you say that you're using it to kind of dissociate from pain, for what's up, from your thoughts, from your pain, that you going into that zone that people call it the binge zone or the food zone, or someone even said, oh, it's the dead zone. I'm dead. I don't feel anything. So that dissociation is a way of coping. So if you don't yet have a way of being with yourself in a way that you can cope with painful, difficult emotions, conflicts, wishes, fears, anxieties, etc. And food, and then the dissociation does that for you. Be gentle with yourself and realize that you can't just, food is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. The problem is the difficulty being with those feelings. And that's why being able to say, okay, I'm eating to get away from this feeling, or recognizing what it is, because what you're doing is focusing on the food part instead of the pain part or the fear or whatever it is that's unbearable and hard to be with.
I also, like, when I was working in your program, we found out that I have this fear of success, and I sabotage my progress, as I've been doing some good progress lately. And then once I get like good results, I either go to a good place emotionally where I can regulate my emotions healthily without using food as coping mechanism, or I hit a certain number on the scale, which is actually a low number. And that's basically what I wanted. But I think I internally get scared and I start sabotaging. And we found out that in the past, I have this fear of success. And I feel like, and I'm capable of doing things. Like when I do things, I get them fast. People like me, people hire me, you know, stuff like that. But then this fear of success is pretty, fear of success and happiness is pretty strong. It feels like as if I'm postponing my life and I'm telling myself, oh, I will live good tomorrow, or not tomorrow. Oh, I will live good after I do this and this and this. And it used to be weight thing before I met you. But after I met you, I cannot think that I will be happy when I lose weight. I don't think that this way anymore. But I come up with something else, you know. I'm going to lose weight when I don't know, get new friends. Or not going to lose weight. I'm going to be happy when I get new friends. Or I'm going to be happy when I have so much money. Or I just am substituting this weight thing with something else. So it feels like I'm not even letting myself to be happy.
Yes.
And that's so I get angry with myself sometimes, you know.
Okay, no. Okay, first of all,
I should not Carly be Gash. Angry with
Carly Gash.
Yeah.
You were doing great up until when you said you get angry with yourself, because that is a self-attack. First of all, that was super insightful that you were realizing that you have this when-then mentality. When I lose weight, I'll be happy. Not so much anymore, you're saying. When I achieve this level of success, I'll be happy. When, then. So sometime in the future, then I'll be happy. And yet you, as you say, are sabotaging that happiness. So it's not logical, it's psychological. Logical is, oh, I will be happy one day and I can be happy. And why shouldn't I be happy? It's my birthright as a human. I'm a good person. Why shouldn't I be happy? That's logical. Psychologically, it's much more complex. So when you get mad at yourself for having this fear of success, fear of happiness, and by the way, why do people have fear of success and fear of happiness? Well, one reason is sometimes it's an idea, if you allow yourself to be happy, if you step on the rug of happiness, someone's going to yank it out from underneath you. That's one fear. And the other is that if you come from a family that struggles, which I think is something we talked about on air last week, if you come from a family that struggles, to be successful is to be not connected to your family in a psychological way. So there could be many reasons for it. But if you get mad at yourself, then all you're doing is making yourself feel bad for just being a human being. Then you're going to go to the zone to get away from being mad at yourself. And that's why I stopped you, because being mad at yourself never, ever helps. That is critical. Being curious. Oh, then I'm doing that thing again where I'm sabotaging myself. What's that about? Let me challenge that. Let me sit with that. Let me process that. Rather than I'm mad at myself because I have that way of sabotaging myself.
Thank you. That makes so much sense. Yes, I definitely have this fear of success. Just this situation about the rug being pulled off. It's been so many times in my childhood. And definitely a fear of disconnection from my family. It's just psychological, so intricately wired. So yeah, it takes time to unwind it and see how it is. I also have a question about abuse. I've been much better not tolerating abuse and catching it and not people even verbally abuse me. But you know, this week I let someone who is close to me do their thing. Like I said something about my dreams, that I wanted this, that I want this, 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 and this amount of money. and these are my dreams. And my dreams were always big since I was born. In my family, I had some extended family members who used to tell me, like, we used to laugh at my dreams and say, like, oh, you're wanting too much.
Carly, and gosh, there's, sorry to interrupt, but if you have people who laugh at your dreams and say you want too much, there's the beginning of your fear of success.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's been constantly like that. I was always not a maverick, but a different one. In my head, I never had like a poverty mentality or something. In my head, I actually had a mentality that everything is possible, and I was born like that. So, and the thing is that I always proved that whatever I wanted, I got it. But people around me were like, you want too much. It's this nice school you're going to who spoiled you. Now you're thinking like that, you know, all this bullshit. And I'm like, and I was so offended. Like, usually people around you support you and like, and they're happy. Like, hey, look, you've got to the best school of the city where it's actually very hard to get even people even bribe like their authorities to get there. And sometimes people even don't take bribes because it's so hard to get there. And just got there at the age of 7 by passing the test and, you know, doing this admission stuff by myself without training or anything. And usually people say, hey, good for you. Well, not in my situation. I used to, like my success was always attacked, always.
Then that's why you're attacking it now. Like, consciously, you wanted them to support you, but unconsciously, mm-hmm. you colluded with them. You identified with them. So as a kid, you railed against this. No, I want good things. I want a good life. I want to go to this good school. I want good, you know, I want good. I want to be happy. As much as you were mocked and shamed for this, because that's not what you know, people do, right? And then this can come from envy and all kinds of things. Ideally, our parents and our families and the people we love support us when we do well, but that is often ideal and not reality. So you had this experience. That you consciously hated, but unconsciously identified with. So now that's the way to be. So now you're doing it to yourself, whereas they did it to you. Now you're doing it to you, and it's just an idea, right? It's an idea that feels like truth, but when we have to convert it back to an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Then it loses its charge. It loses its power.
You know, at one point, it's just so hard. I was always like opposing them and like fighting. Like, I was always fighting, like quarrel verbally or even physical for my beliefs and my right to be happy. But it's just so hard. You know, it's just so sad that at one point when somebody tells you that stuff like long enough, you know that you're not good, or like you will never achieve it. So no matter how hard you believe, at one point, and especially people who you love and who are close to your heart and you're a kid, at one point, so I reached past beyond 30s, and it didn't hit me then when I was young, because I was like a you know, like a rocket or this train just going to my goals. But then when I got older, it just hit on me there, you know, it was just so unexpected. After 30s, it just hit me there, and all this pain and these voices, they were so strong in my head. So it's just this mechanism, I don't like it, you know. So
but you can change it. You're changing it.
Be patient, and each time when a slip comes up or another, like, fear of success, sabotage comes, just to be nice, kind to myself and say, of course, it's still present so far.
Yes.
And just change thinking.
Yes, and don't focus on food. Stop focusing on food. Say, I'm helping myself in some way. I'm coping in some way. What is it now? Am I sabotaging myself, or am I just soothing myself by escaping the bad feeling? What is this mm-hmm. doing for me? Be curious, not critical. You hear me say this a lot. Yeah. be curious. What's going on with me? Why am I doing this? Not, oh, look, I ate that. That never helps. But when you say, why did I eat it? Never helps. And to chip away at this idea, okay, I have this fear of success and I know where it comes from. And I logically know it doesn't make sense to me, but psychologically it does. And I'm just going to, it took me time to build this idea. It's going to take me time to take it away. I saw this couple and they had been like living together for something like 19 years, living together and then they got married. And when they lived together, they shared everything. Everything was equal. And as soon as they got married, suddenly she expects him to take out the trash because that's what husbands do. Right? So she had been living with this guy for nearly 20 years. But when she got married, like you said, your 30s, this all kicked in. Well, when this woman got married, these ideas of, well, this is what husbands do and this is what wives do, just came to her, into her head, because we get programmed whether we know it or not. And so to get mad at yourself for your programming is just going to make it things worse. But to say, oh, there's my programming again, let me challenge that. Why should I suffer?
So I just patiently should unprogram myself and be okay with the process, understanding that it's a process and it takes time. And, I think sometimes I don't see my success, but I get better at acknowledging what I achieved. This picture of letter of life helped me, like the visual I created from your book, The Letter of Life.
The Ladder of Life.
It's not the book. The book name is The Binge Cure, but there is like a concept, The Ladder of Life, to picture yourself on the, and to look down and see what I achieved and look up and see what I want at the same time, acknowledging where I am now. So this has been so helpful, honestly. It just helped me so much. And I escaped many, many awful traps this week, just thinking about like this, from this ladder of life concept, like thinking, hey, it's not that I'm always down or underachieving. It's ladder of life. I've done so much.
Good.
Look where I'm now.
Look where you are. Thanks. It's so important. The ladder of life is, so often we look up. Why aren't I there? Why aren't I where I want to be? Why haven't I done X, Y, Z? And when we do that, all we do is feel bad because we're not where we want to be yet. But then we're never living our life because we're always waiting for some point in the future.
Yes, I think I found the solution to this thing, fear of success. Maybe I should really acknowledge my success in dealing with fear of success, using the concept of ladder of life, because somehow I think that success is something I should have because I was born so talented, I don't know, and good and dope. But so when I don't have it, I get frustrated. Whereas maybe I should really measure my success in getting rid of fear of success. It's been way worse. Sabotaging was way worse in my past. It's getting a little better every day. It's a little more insightful. So maybe I should even,
and that's success,
like dissect this concept instead of black and white or everything or nothing.
Yes,
maybe I should dissect it and see how I progressed in. Even with dealing with fear of success, I know it's tiny. It's kind of dividing one pound of apples into, I don't know, one-tenth of a pound, but it should work.
I think that is a great idea. I encourage you. I even hear some hope in your voice from when we first started talking. And I love your reflection and your ability to kind of understand yourself and reflect on why you do what you do. So use that ability this week instead of focusing on how much you're eating or not eating. Success is not about what you're eating or not eating. Success is, did I identify why? What's going on with me? Let me just see why I did that. That's the first step. Can you do it? I know you can do it. Okay.
I don't know. Sometimes I don't do it, you know.
But sometimes
I
you do.
I should.
But sometimes
yes,
you do.
Sometimes I don't. And in this moment, I'm like, oh, fuck it. You know, I'm going to go and eat. And I feel deprived because, like, but then I'm like, really, I don't need that much. I just need a little, even treat. I need a little and I feel satisfied. But
so what?
Yeah.
Ask
well,
yourself.
I'll go with it.
Ask yourself, what are you hungry for? And call me back next week. Let me know how it goes.
Okay. Thank you so much. I will.
Thank you so much, Carly Gash. And and I just want to say that this is this idea that you can't have happiness, you can't have success, that it's somehow not for you, is an idea that was put in your head by people who were trying to probably deal with their own lack of success. And begrudged you yours. So when you remember where these messages come from, it changes everything. When it's our parents or our family and they're our original gods, they know us, they know what's right, then it's, oh, I'm doomed, I can't succeed. But when it's, no, these are not people on Mount Olympus. These are people with their own stuff who were dealing with their own disappointments in life and begrudged you yours. And envy is a strong motivator to make people, you know, put other people down. Then it stops being so real.
That's a very weird mechanism going on in people, you know, Dr. Nina. Why people are like that? You don't have success, be okay with that. Learn. Do it. Why would you like berate others? That's like so weird, honestly.
Well, that I'm with you there, and I could think of some words other than weird to describe that kind of behavior. It is human, but it's destructive. It's destructive. So I have another caller that I'm going to get to, but Carly Gash, thank you so much for calling, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you next week.
Thank you so much and have a wonderful day. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. Hi, caller. Who's this? Hello? Oh, Ronan's telling me to hang on. Okay, just really briefly, the ladder of life. So if you're, oh, they dropped. Caller, if you want to call back, Ronan is ready for you. Oh, she's back or he's back. I don't know.
Hello.
Hi, caller.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, hi, Dr. Nina. I couldn't tell if I got through or not. So I'm so happy that I did. And thank you for taking my call. And I just wanted to say I really identified with Carly Gash on a lot of her things, particularly like the self-sabotage. So it was really good for me to hear and just listen to her. I have similar struggles as well. And just it was good to listen to her. I have a question for you because I feel like I'm cheating on your program. I have a lot of health issues, and it's been determined by my doctor that I need to do the low FODMAP diet, which I actually started to do because I'm having so many stomach symptoms. At first, I thought they were related to my neuropathy and my accident and just being stressed and overeating, but it actually might be turning out that I am highly allergic to gluten and lactose, just completely intolerant. I've already noticed within a few days the benefits of not being bloated, not having stomach pain. The problem is I'm looking this diet, and it is called Low FODMAP Diet by Gastroenterology Consultants.
Yes.
I have. Holy moly. It's okay. Yes.
I have an absolute. First of all, I've been asked this question before. I am against weight loss diets. But I also have an autoimmune disease, and because I have an autoimmune disease, I have to be I've been on the autoimmune AIP diet. It's called AIP protocol, which is extremely restrictive. And so how do you manage having to be on a restrictive diet, a restrictive way of eating?
I thought you had mentioned it on another show, and I'm like, so I'm nervous, I'm scared, I'm hopeful. It's not for weight loss. I am not, you'd be proud of me, I'm not even looking at the scale. I am just scared because I'm looking at this thing, and again, I was mostly vegan anyway for animals, so I'm used to eating pretty healthy, but some of these foods were making me sick, like hummus and stuff like that. So I'm just baffled by, you know, an apple is bad, or this is bad, or cabbage, Brussels sprouts, and it says avoid, not bad, so that's where I need to stop myself.
Good catch.
What is your advice for my thought process and my state of mind? I would love to hear it.
Okay, so here is what I have to say. First of all, these programs, we'll call them low FODMAP, AIP, which essentially, for those of you who don't know it, it's extremely restrictive. Basically, I know for AIP, you can really only eat various meats, and I was a vegetarian before I had to be on this, various meats and vegetables, very few fruits, and that's essentially it. And low FODMAP, I have a friend who's a similar thing. So it's all about restriction. And that, of course, I'm always talking about how the experience of restriction makes you want something more. So what I had to do was really reframe my thinking. And this is what I tell people like you who have to be on this for health, to think of it not as I can't have that, but that is poison for me. That hurts my body. I think the word poison is not even too extreme of a word, rather than allergic. That is poison to my body. And I'm going to make healthy choices to take care of myself. I am taking care of myself by having these foods, but not those. And to really think of it as healthy versus, oh, I'm deprived. And what helps is you start physically feeling better, which you just mentioned, and it makes it easier to do it. You feel physically better. And so it's easier to follow something when you actually feel physically better. Do I miss having, some pizza every once in a while? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And the other day, my 12-year-old is really into cooking. So she made homemade pasta and homemade tomato sauce. Can't eat tomatoes on I can't eat tomatoes. So she, and then they made me this like AIP pasta made out of peas, which was not quite the same.
thought was there. That must have been hard to say.
Yeah. You can get the pea pasta on Amazon, by the way. If you can have peas. But of course I want it. But I've been doing it now for a year and a half, and it's getting a lot easier, or over almost a year and a half, feels like a year and a half. It's getting a lot easier to do because I think, you know what? I'm going to feel terrible if I eat that. And it's also going to be like, it's going to make me sick, and it could set off my immune disease. And I do not want that. So when you think of it in terms of health, it is much less depriving. I can have that rather than I can't have that.
So what I understand, that was so helpful. You really nailed it. I'm hearing the decision is ultimately mine. I have the decision every day. It's just, do I want the constipation? And for me, it was like severe stomach cramping, massive bloating. I mean, I'm not exact. These things were, I just put it aside because I was dealing with cervical neck issues and neuropathy. So that like got pushed aside, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just overeating, but I was realizing I'm really not overeating. So thank you. I have the decision. And then just one comment that might help other viewers, and I feel that maybe I have a little experience in this kind of mentality, is that I had bulimia in the past. And for me, my trigger was the only time I ever would have a bulimic episode, and it wasn't every time it happened, but I would have to drink alcohol, I guess, because that lowers your inhibitions and increases your hunger, at least for me personally. So my decision a while back was to just cut the alcohol. I mean, did I like it? Yes, Fortunately, I was like a once a week drinker, so it wasn't a big deal, but I enjoyed it. But it was linked to, oh, this could possibly happen. So it became very freeing to be like, sure, I can anytime I want to have a drink. But it's like, I eventually learned absolutely not, because I will get sick, or I have a potential of getting really sick. So that kind of mindset was helpful. So I wanted to share that, because sometimes when I run into my friends or other people with eating issues, alcohol can often be linked as a, you know, an aggravator to it. So thank you so much. You really nailed the answer. And it's just really changing my mindset, truly.
It is. And I'm sorry that you're having to go through this, but I'm glad that you found a solution. And ultimately, the better you feel physically, the easier it will be. But just acknowledge that it can be hard. But don't think in terms of I'm going to be good or I'm going to be bad, or you know, this is good food or this is bad food. This is healthy or this is unhealthy. This is helpful to me or this is unhelpful to me.
Right. And if I do eat something that I shouldn't or doesn't agree, it's that whole don't be critical, just to go back and think, oh, why? What happened? Why would I want to reach for that? And just again, right, talking more positively to myself, because nobody's perfect, you know, in anything, much more less when it comes to eating.
More encouraging. Yes, to be encouraging rather than cruel and attacking yourself.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Dr. Nina. I really love your show. And thank you.
Oh, thank you, Christina. Thank you for calling. Let me know how it goes.
Absolutely. I will. I definitely will. Take care. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Oh, that was very sweet. Okay. So the ladder of life that Carly Gash was talking about is, imagine a metaphorical ladder. Modern world Zen, you say the screen looks weird. I don't know what to say. It looks normal from my end, but hopefully you can hear me. And by the way, for those of you who are watching on Instagram, I'm getting my technology hopefully in the next week so that I can hook it up so you can hear the callers, but you can also hear the callers on later on the LA Talk Radio archives or anywhere you get podcasts. It's also made into a podcast that shows on Apple Podcasts and all other podcasts. So the ladder of life that Carly Gash was talking about, which I do discuss in my book, The Binge Cure, is that we need to new caller. I'm going to get to that ladder of life later. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Hello?
Hi, Dr. Nina. Hello? Can you hear me?
I hear you, Jenny.
How are you?
I'm fine, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very happy I got through. A lot of people were calling today. So that's great. It was very interesting to listen to the last caller. I forget her name. Christina? Is that
Christina,
it?
Yes.
Christina. Because her last statement about alcohol was really interesting, because I've been trying not to drink alcohol because it exacerbates my panic and my anxiety. So I'm trying to only drink it when I'm like with, you know, with friends and not just at home because I'm bored, you know. Instead of reaching for like a cookie, I reach for like the bottle of wine.
but it's the same concept, right? It's the same idea. It's totally. Why it's not, oh, I should not eat. It should not be. I shouldn't drink that wine. It should be, what's making me want to drink that wine? Just like what's making me want to eat that cookie. And
sure.
And so one solution is to not drink, and that worked for Christina. But I would say that to go deeper and to say, well, alcohol maybe lowered her inhibitions, but then don't just disguise that by not drinking alcohol. What are the inhibitions? What are the prohibitions? What's going on? So for you, it's, well, what is it that you're trying to get away from when you're drinking wine?
Well, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm explaining this in the wrong way, but I feel like it's a comfort to me because I live alone. Well, I live with my dog, but you know, I basically live alone, and my whole family is far away, and we're still in the middle of this pandemic, and so I'm spending a lot of alone time. You know, I'm not going out very often, only for like necessary things. And I'm still taking, you know, the isolation seriously. So not to, you know, because we're in an uptick here in Los Angeles. And so when I feel alone, I feel like I sit down and watch TV or read. And I feel like that bottle of rosé staring at me is like, it's like a friend. And I
okay.
pour the glass, and, you know, because I don't overdrink ever. But that glass sitting there next to me is very, I don't know, it makes me feel comforted.
So
like
that's
a friend.
Okay. So you're telling us that you're lonely. You live alone except for your dog. And that glass of rosé is like a friend. So you could see how the rosé is serving the purpose psychologically of keeping you company. And being comforting. So the idea is not to focus on rosé, just as we don't want to focus on cookies. It's to be able to say, well, how else can I deal with my loneliness? What else do I need in terms of connecting with other people? How can I be there and comfort myself if it's mm-hmm. you know, a time when you can't reach out to anyone or there's no one there, whatever, right? So it's hard to give up rosé when it does something for you, just like it's hard to give up cookies if they provide that purpose.
But then strangely enough, as I'm drinking my glass of wine, I'm getting anxiety toward the end thinking, oh God, I hope this doesn't create, you know, panic inside of me. Because normally when I have a panic attack, it's after I've also been drinking. I get nervous.
Yeah, you might have tied those things together and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you're afraid that drinking is going to cause a panic attack, and then every time you have a panic attack, you say, see, drinking causes it. They seem to be linked, but it might be the panic over having a panic attack that causes the panic attack. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes more sense. And that's very true. When you have such severe, like I don't have very often panic attacks, but they're so severe when they happen that I kind of become a scientist and I kind of go back, or a detective even. I go back in time and I think, what did I do those moments before the panic attack happened? So I never repeat that again, you know? And so I've actually, strangely enough, my last panic attack, I was eating pretzels and drinking a glass of wine and eating pretzels and watching Netflix. And I haven't been able to touch pretzels since then either. Like I have.
You made the connection.
And I'm afraid to eat a pretzel.
But the pretzels didn't cause the panic attack any more than the rosé did. Your mind is just seizing upon that.
Yeah.
Panic attacks are often just out of the blue, but then people have anxiety about having panic attacks, which lead to anxiety attacks. But panic attacks are weird in that they are that you often cannot connect them to anything, whereas anxiety attacks can be a little bit different. And those are tied to situations or things that are happening. But pretzels and rosé is not causing your panic attack.
Is it normal to do people do that? Like, is it normal to tie, you know, these things together?
Yes, it is normal to tie those things together. We look for patterns, because back in the day, we needed to see patterns. Oh, those big paw prints in the ground, those belong to a big animal who will want to kill us and eat us. Let's avoid the paw prints. So we are wired to see patterns. The problem is, whereas it used to help us with survival, it now doesn't help us with survival, and it just creates these ideas these narratives that then we, unbeknownst to ourselves, we often just take the narrative as truth and we filter information to fit the narrative. Oh, I was drinking wine and I had a panic attack. Wine causes panic attacks. then every time it happens, you'll say, see? But then if you have a panic attack when you weren't drinking wine, that will become the anomaly. See what I mean? So we both look for evidence to fit our narrative. And when something doesn't fit the narrative, we explain it away.
Gotcha. I mean, interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. So, one day I should be able to eat pretzels again, right?
Should be able to eat pretzels and drink wine. But what you're talking about with wine being a friend and comforting,
yeah,
that it's very analogous to food or anything else, right? What you need is comfort. What you need is a friend.
Yeah.
And that's the true need. And that's maybe the difficult longing or yearning or emptiness or hole in your life that's hard to be with.
Sure. Yeah. And that's been a running kind of, like, I've never not had a job for this long, you know, or ever not have job actually. And I've never spent this much time at home, you know, with the stay at home order and such. So it's been very interesting. And it's not that I actually am starting to kind of enjoy alone time, but at the same time, when I do have those feelings of loneliness, it's interesting. I look, and it's not all liquor. I don't run toward like the vodka, you know, I just see that pink bottle of rosé and it's so pretty. And it just makes me feel better to crack it open.
It's so pretty. All right. It's like girl wine. Right?
Yeah.
And what are your associations with rosé?
Like being with my girlfriends in the summer, you know, yeah.
Being with your girlfriend.
Oh. I know.
So it's those associations that make you feel that rosé is like a friend, because it's associated with being with your friends. So, yeah. So I would say working on comforting yourself which could also help with these anxiety / panic attacks, being able to be there for yourself and be kind and encouraging and calming to yourself will help a lot.
Mm-hmm. I will try. I'm trying to start a meditation practice and really be diligent about doing it every day. So that has been helpful. But
Modern World Zen just wrote on Instagram, we need to learn to love ourselves better. And that's true. That's absolutely what I'm talking about. Yes, the key to changing anything you want to change in your life, whether it's drinking wine or eating cookies or pretzels or whatever, binging, emotional eating, whatever, the key is to be kind to ourselves, which is very much easier said than done. But I'm glad that you're using meditation as a way. You know, I'm fine. People often think I'm against meditation. I'm not against meditation. I'm against meditation for some people at first. But if meditation works for you, then good for you. Do it.
Yeah. Well, like breathing, you know, for my anxiety. Just sitting down and taking deep breaths is like shockingly common, because I'm used to breathing so fast and short, being that I'm an anxious person, which is, it's such a strange feeling to actually take deep breaths like you did when you were a baby.
Well, keep taking those deep breaths.
I will try.
Thank you,
Dr. Tina.
You are very welcome. Call me and let me know how you're doing.
I will. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Okay.
So much.
Bye, Jenny.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Really fast, because we're out of time almost, but I want to finish this ladder of life. So if you're always looking up and you're never where you want to go, and then you feel bad and you feel like a failure and you feel, well, you just feel terrible. And then when you feel terrible, well, you're more liable to, or more likely to use food or rosé to make yourself feel better. So the key is, think about this metaphorical ladder.
look down and see where you started. Say, huh, remember when I was way down there and things were at a certain place in my life and I had a certain lack of understanding of myself, and look at how far I've come. I've climbed all this way. And look how far that is. Look at what I've done. Look at what I've achieved. I am really proud of myself. Look at how I've changed. Look at what I've done. Look at how I've evolved. That's a good feeling. So we've got to look at the past, from the past to the present, and say, huh, I'm proud of myself. And be also on the rung of the ladder that we are. And modern world Zen is saying we also need purpose. Yes, we do. But purpose can sometimes be confused with ambition. We do need to find purpose, but purpose can be many things to many people. I believe we need to have a purposeful, meaningful lives with purpose and meaning. And that's part of your growth. And then be where you are and say, hey, right here, right now, in the present, I feel good about my life overall. Yes, there are things I want to change. I want to keep climbing. I want to get up there. But I am going to balance where I want to go with where I've been with where I am. And that gives you perspective. And you're going to feel a lot better than if you're always looking up going, why am I not up there? So that's the ladder of life. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. You can listen live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get your podcasts. Again, I am so glad to spend this time with you. Take good care. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Please wear a mask. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.